Hello and welcome back to JLXP, the third episode we've done in Korea. And as you can see, it's a little bit different. We are on the train from Seoul to Busan, the train to Busan. We're going to have DeMonte later in the episode. And this is pretty cool. We got three cameras on this train, here, here, there. There's going to be some noise throughout. We're going to go in and out of tunnels. But I'm really looking forward to this podcast. We're going to be having my discussion and analysis of the Swiss stage. I think it was an incredibly meaningful Swiss stage, specifically for North America, because for the first time since 2014, a North American team has made it through while no European teams have made it through. It's the first non-C9 team to actually make it through since TSM in 2014. So just a massive accomplishment for Energy here at the World Championship. And, you know, personally, the day leading up to that and the day of, you can see some of the behind the scenes stuff we're going to have on the Let's Go YouTube video over on the LCS channel. I talked to Palafox's mom. I talked to the few Energy jerseys that we were able to find then. Just an incredibly nerve-wracking day. But we're going to get more into that when DeMonte joins the podcast. First, we're going to talk a little bit about Swiss stage as a whole. The quarterfinals, for those of you who don't know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, one best of five each day. Thursday is going to be Energy versus Weibo. Friday is going to be Gen G versus BLG. Saturday is going to be JDG versus KT. And then T1 versus LNG, which will be the loudest fan matchup for sure, is going to be on Sunday. And that'll obviously give the four teams for the semifinals. But those are the teams that we're going to get to see more of. There were several teams that we're not going to get to see more of. And one of those teams is C9, which I want to talk about now. I think when C9 looks back on this year, it's going to be very frustrating for them because they were the champions of 2022 summer. So I'm going back that far when they had Jensen as their mid lane, Fudge, Blabber, Zven, Berserker. And it felt like they were the best team the entire year, except they could never quite put it all together, if that makes sense. Even in spring, I remember talking to Jack and some of their players after they won the spring finals convincingly against Golden Guardians. And they were concerned because they'd like never been that confident before a final. And usually that leads to some type of letdown, like you're not ready for your opponents. But then they won that. So they didn't have that like blast back into reality of needing to really challenge yourself and compete at the highest level. And then it felt like all throughout summer split, they kind of meandered around. They tried to play all these different styles rather than just really, truly trying to hone in and demolish people. They lost the final to Energy, as we all know. And I think I was still hoping that they could find that extra gear. Because universally, most people consider Berserker the best player in the LCS. For me, Fudge is the jungle goat of the LCS. M&S was up and down, but had some amazing laning mechanics. And then Zven and Fudge, I feel like, are really smart about the game, really good communicators. And that team should just be able to work. But for whatever reason, it never did. And specifically about their performance at the World Championship, the first NA versus EU game, which ends up not really feeling like it matters in the grand scheme of NA versus EU because G2 lost to Energy, the number one seed of both regions. So now it's like, you know, check for North America. They're the better region. But the day before, Fnatic beat Cloud9 2-1. And I would have to say, for me, it felt like Cloud9 was actually in a position that they would consider winning in all three games. And it's pretty tragic because I think Berserker in particular, and you saw this when they went for their final bow after being eliminated. Berserker was the last one in his chair, kind of lagging behind the team because I think, and this is my speculation, he was so disappointed in his performance. There were three, I mean, they only played six games. And there were three games to me for Cloud9. The LNG game, game two of the Fnatic series and game three of the Fnatic series, where Berserker played a crucial team fight far below the level that he's displayed the last two consecutive years, which can just be unlucky. It can be nerves. It's hard to know what it is. But in the LNG game, where they had Baron buff and they were making a push down mid lane, he Kai'Sa ulted to try and get a final kill onto Gala. When Gala was basically out of the fight, Kai'Sa ulted in, didn't get the execute, essentially took himself out of the fight, even though the other AD carry was already out of the fight. He did a similar thing with Kai'Sa, ulting over the Baron pit, trying to chase Noah Zeri in game two of the Fnatic C9 series. Didn't get that one. Cloud9 ended up losing three or four people in that fight, losing the game. And then I think the very crucial fight of the series, above the Dragon Pit in game three of the Fnatic series, he flashed forward to Zaya, didn't get any kills, and then ended up giving his bounty over to Noah Zephelios. And there was a lot of things that went wrong for Cloud9. I think even though they played quite successfully around Fudge to get him advantages in each game, even though MNS got a solo kill, Cassante versus Syndra, when he just had a null magic mantle, like solo kill turret dive, that a lot of things go well, but then didn't execute well in team fights, I think, as a team. And yeah, their year, which felt like this ridiculously dominant 18 months for Cloud9, ends up with no big takeaways that I think they're really going to be feeling proud of right now. They won two of the last three splits, which is something that should be celebrated. It's not easy to win the North American LCS, or just what it's called, the LCS now. But they're going to be super disappointed because they didn't beat non-North American teams at MSI, and they walk away from Worlds only beating MAD, losing to T1, and losing to LNG, and ultimately losing to Fnatic 1-2. So I think they did have a good year, but it's a disappointing year based on the potential that I felt out of that team. Another team that's very disappointing, actually, is, weirdly enough, G2, because they were really good. And I know it'll be easy to talk trash because they got swept by North America, but that team can play. Like, I said this a little bit on the analyst desk. I think something that happened to this team was not necessarily avoidable, but I can see why it happened with the way they approached the game and the way they drafted. Because I'm reading between the lines, but there were pre-tournament interviews where Mickey talked about how they didn't even necessarily feel like they were learning that much from other Worlds teams, and other Worlds teams were learning more from them in regards to champion picks or the way the meta was developing. And that was true for the first two games. They were able to whip out Draven. They were able to play very aggressively, come from behind in games, you know. But then they ran into Gen G. They had a low priority on Zaya. They highly prioritized Maokai first pick. And specifically, Gen G brought out the permaban of Draven and Kalista and stopped G2 from being able to generate easy bot prio, which was a really core way that they succeeded in LEC, seen by the fact that that Mickey was the MVP of the LEC. And that a support doesn't win MVP unless he can consistently create bot prio with his AD carry and impact the map. Because when he's stuck at his turret, you cannot just leave. Otherwise, your AD carry will die time and time again. But you could tell they, after losing to Gen G in the G2 series, it almost felt like they then tried to adapt to the tournament meta, but they were in a state where for the month that they were here, they weren't actually playing the tournament meta. They were playing what they were most comfortable with. And then I think after they lost to Energy, they had less than 24 hours to adjust. And it felt like specifically in game two, when they played the Lissandra support with Caps Jace, that was more the type of League of Legends that they wanted to play. They actually took a game off of BLG. I think games one and three of that series were also super competitive. And I think BLG is a hell of a team as well. So that's got to be considered a massive failure for G2. I don't know if they're going to make roster changes in the offseason. Usually you end up doing that when a team that is that high with their aspirations fails. They'll usually make changes. but they were so clearly the best team in the LEC. And I think if you play this Swiss stage over and over again, they probably get out more than 50% of the time. So I don't know how they're going to do things. I don't know the state of their contracts, but I would like to see that team personally get another run at it, because they played, they were just a really good team. So it's pretty sad to see them go. Another team that got eliminated, unfortunate draw for them, is D+. They almost made the miracle run through the lower bracket, getting 2-0s over BDS and GAM. But then they drew against KT, a team they literally hadn't beaten all year. And weirdly enough, they're another team that was actually a little bit less achieving than Cloud9 domestically when you compare them to their domestic counterparts. But if you just look at their roster, you think, holy crap, this team is going to be extremely good. But they also could never quite put it together. They had, statistically, the second best early game of all teams in Swiss, yet did not make the top eight because their teamwork just ended up being non-existent, which is weird because they have Canyon, Showmaker, Deft. It feels like Kana, it feels like those players with their experience, their world championships, their deep runs at international events would be able to do this. But despite being predicted by the majority of LCK teams at the start of the year to actually win the LCK, never came close to winning the LCK and ends up being the lowest performing LCK team at the World Championship. So farewell to them. All of DRX's coaching staff and players have been eliminated from the World Championship. So that run was definitely a dream run, and none of them have been able to replicate it. So we will definitely see new world champions. No one will be able to defend that world championship. So the Energy versus Weibo game, I'm going to go over a little bit more with Demonte when he joins the podcast. I'm going to talk a bit about the Gen G versus BLG game. And this one is really fascinating to me. And I'm not as bullish on BLG being the best team in the world outside of JDG now as I was before the tournament, because of the way that I saw them struggle and claw their way through the Swiss stage. But let's not forget, even though I have Gen G, or most people have Gen G as, you know, a top seed, a tournament favorite, BLG 3-0'd them at MSI and eliminated them from that tournament. So from a matchup perspective, there are things that Gen G need to overcome. When I look at Gen G, they were the most dominant team in Swiss, but it'll also be strange because they're the least tested team from Swiss. They've only played 4 stage games. And in those 4 stage games, they were just styling on people. I mean, they played Kha'Zix's jungle. They blind picked Akali. They played Akali twice. They got Zyra Khan 3 times. They were winning all these games and basically qualifying out of the Swiss stage before the Swiss meta even developed to start banning Zaya or moving into Senna Tom or moving into higher Aphelios Pryo. So there have been stage adaptations that have happened since we last saw them on stage. Now, obviously, they're a versatile team and they have the ability to adapt to that, but we just haven't seen it specifically. And when you look back at the way they actually lost to BLG at MSI, I had to go remind myself of this series before this podcast, so I'll just pass forward what I learned. In that series, Chovy played Lissandra, Annie, and Annie. And in my opinion, in all 3 games, BLG had better team fight compositions. Elk was the player of that series. He had 34 kills and 4 deaths across 3 games with a 16-1 game on Jinx to close the series. He played 2 games of Jinx, 1 game of Zeri. They played better team fighting mids pretty much the entire time. And Bin was stronger than Doron in the top lane. When I look at the way Gen G won in the LCK, even though Paze was a great team fighting AD carry, the team generated all their leads through top, mid, jungle. Bot lane was basically even for them the majority of the time. And for me, that's hard to do against BLG because Bin is the best top laner in the tournament so far. 369 versus Bin is a whole other matchup. It's a whole nother can of worms because 369 generally owns Bin. But in terms of the individual's ability to impact a game thus far, Bin has been the best top laner at the World Championship. He also statistically leads all players in goal difference in lane. So because Bin exists, because Yagao roams so well, because Ahn roams so well from the bottom lane, and because Genji doesn't necessarily get bottom lane leads organically, it's just actually kind of hard for Genji to get a lead. And then if they're not picking better team fighting composition, so if they don't snowball early, that becomes hard for them. So I don't know what Genji's going to do. I think I have to. I mean, I don't even know who I'm going to predict in this series. Right now, I'm weirdly favoring BLG a little bit. Like, I'm talking myself into it because they literally 3-0 Genji. However, talking to other people, many people consider Genji actually the best team in the world, not JDG. We're just going to have to see. But that is a garbage draw for Genji. The fact that they were the best team win percentage-wise, yet to drop a single stage game in the Swiss stage, and then they have to face against a team that went 15-1 in the LPL and actually eliminated them from MSI, that's tough. That's really tough for a quarterfinal. I think most people end up predicting Genji in this series. I think a big thing that Peanut specifically for Genji needs to do is just play better than he did in MSI. I think a lot of people think him and Chovy choked in that series, which you can see because on paper, Chovy should own Yagao. That just didn't happen at MSI. And Yagao is an incredibly underestimated mid laner consistently, partially because you look at that series they just had against J2. I feel like Caps owned him for most of the series, yet time and time again, Yagao is the one who's victorious. I think he does a lot within the game that you don't necessarily see through the laning phase. So that's going to be a super fascinating series for me. The series after that, JDG versus KT. I just find KT so funny, man. Listen to who they had to play. They had to play BLG in round one. They lose. They play D plus in round two in the 0-1 match. They play Weibo in round three, beat them. They play LNG in the promotion match, best of three, lose that 2-1. Then they have to play D plus again. So they have faced five LPL or LCK teams in all five of their draws. And then they get drawn against the tournament favorite for the first round of the quarterfinals. Congratulations! JDG beat BDS, BLG, LNG. I don't think you can argue that that was an easy path. They just won all of their games, so they deserved it. They had to beat the third and second place teams from the LPL again after already qualifying as the LPL number one seed. JDG still going for that golden road. Spring champion, MSI champion, summer champion, world champion. The last time a team had a chance to do that going into the world championship, it's happened a couple times. RNG had that chance. G2 had that chance. Everyone has fallen short. So JDG really wants to make that happen. You still have to favor them in the tournament because the way that they win games feels so repeatable. They have Knight and Ruler who consistently win lane. You have 369 who I want to say wins his matchup consistently, but he consistently picks losing matchups, and he's just really good at not losing them badly. So they pick incredible team fighting comps. They get mild leads early in the carry positions, and then they out execute in team fights time and time again. The only thing which I'm willing to forgive due to their strength of schedule is on average, they've actually been slightly behind in early games through their five games so far at the World Championship, but I'm not super worried about that. However, if KT is going to have a way of winning, I think it has to be through early game domination. And KT is a very aggressive team when they're at their best. As you can tell, we're also on the train to Busan, which is about to take a stop, but we're going to continue on this podcast. KT has been playing stuff like Viego. They played Zac Jungle. They played Ryze Top. High execution, early game, snowball comps. And aiming is the one who they try and get so much of their early game gold into so that they still have an insurance policy in the late game. KT fans, while they want KT to win, understand that this team feels completely cursed. Based on their matchup in Swiss stage and based on their draw, it would feel that way. But if they end up beating JDG, or if they make a run towards the World Championship, which honestly I still think is possible, it's going to be one of the most impressive runs in history. So We'll see about that. I think I probably give JDG less than most people would. I give him like a 70-30 advantage in this series because I think KT's really good. They lost one game in the entire LCK Summer Split regular season. The reason they didn't win splits, I feel like, is they have this block against T1. They're 0-3 against T1 in best of series this entire year. And I think possibly because expectations will be low on them against JDG, since everyone expects them to be these demons that are going to win the whole world championship, maybe that allows KT to play with a little bit more freedom. Final series I want to go over before bringing in Demonte is T1 versus LNG. And T1 is a team, and I've talked about this before, that has actually had, across the last 2.5 years, perhaps the second best stretch of their organization's history, but then the second best stretch of any team ever's history. Because the best stretch of history would be when they won world championships in 2015 and 2016 consecutively, then won MSI 2017, made it all the way to the finals in 2017. That's amazing. But this team of T1 made semifinals in 2021. They made MSI and world finals in 2022. And then they made it pretty deep in MSI as well. They're always either winning LCK or second place in LCK. Yet because they haven't won a new international title with this iteration of Faker is a big disappointment and it creates huge pressure. But if you actually just like put that resume for any other team that's not T1, you're thinking, holy crap, that's been a great 2 years. Yet for T1, it's disappointing and that adds a lot of pressure to the team. You can even hear Karia in some of his interviews saying that the team is at 50% of where he wants them to be. Because the expectation, if they're all at 100%, would be, oh yeah, they should never lose to anyone, which is completely unrealistic expectations. What's interesting to me about T1 here, though, is throughout this 2 year run, I feel like they have been a very aggressive early game team that tries to just win as many lanes as possible, hands diff you, and then just, I mean, they flip more barons than anybody else. And then with those barons, they'll just mob up in a lane as five people and try and dive you. Like, it's this incredibly aggressive team. Yet the really old school T1 was like the team fight gods. They're the ones where it doesn't matter if you're 2,000, 5,000 gold ahead, you're going to Faker, Shockwave will find them all, Orianna, Rakan, and manage to win the game. Yet when they struggled a little bit, and in their BLG series that qualify them to the quarterfinals here, especially game two, they played Gragas top, scaling matchup, got solo killed twice by Bin's Jax. They played Faker's Orianna again. They played Jinx. They played Tahm Kench. They were playing scaling team fighting. So I don't know if that's a pivot because they haven't been able to win the way that they've won the last 2 years that couldn't quite get them over the edge. So I don't know if we're going to see that continue. Because they're going up against LNG, who, despite being from the LPL, is a pretty slow team. Tarzan is a big part of that. Tarzan, Scout, both actually at one point LCK players, but very conservative in the early game. Scout was the LPL MVP, so they often just scale up, allow Scout to carry. They have Gallo, the two-time MSI champion, great AD carry on that team as well. So of the four series, this one has the potential to have the most drawn out games. And it's also another one where I think right now I'm actually 50-50 on it. I was thinking as an NA fan, I wouldn't mind if NRG picked T1 because there's just something that feels off about that team right now because of the pressure. And one mild note on T1 is it will really depend on their ability to handle the crowd and their opponent's ability to handle the crowd. Because when they played against BLG and good things started happening for T1, it was probably, and I'm not exaggerating, 3 times louder than anything else that happened the entire week. And that's going to be, for this quarterfinal, a bigger venue. It's in a prime slot on Sunday. It's against an LPL team. So anything good that happens for T1 will be a massive surge of noise and vibration for those players on stage. And conversely, anything that happens for LNG depending on how many LPL fans are able to get access, it's not going to be that loud. Anything they do, is going to be silent, which is also going to be a change because as a player, you're pretty used to good things happening and having a fan reaction. So the absence of that is going to change the energy for them on stage. So both teams are going to actually have to manage that as well as possible, and we'll see who does it better. And it's hard to know if like that's going to be the difference of the series, but it's definitely going to be a factor. So those are the four quarterfinals. I think a side note is this is probably the best quarterfinal draw we've ever had. The fact that there were four LPL teams, three LCK teams, and we got no regional team kill matchups. We get three LPL versus LCK and then NA versus LPL, which I'm really happy about that matchup. I think even though they've played once, first game of the Swiss stage, the teams are wildly different. And for all those people that try and give energy crap for their strength of schedule, Weibo, TL, Mad G2, Weibo's path was energy, G2, KT, Mad, Fnatic. They also didn't beat anyone from the LPL or the LCK. Weibo got in because they beat energy, Mad, and Fnatic. So that one, if we're bright siding here, is anyone's game for energy. But that's actually going to do it for my solo part of the podcast, and we're going to bring in Demonte. All right, welcome back. Joined by Demonte. We both put headphones on. It's rather loud on the train to help us control our volume with the conversation. But we're just talking. I've never even seen a podcast on a train.
Yeah, this is amazing. Like, I don't know, just the whole experience environment is so cool.
Yeah, plus you're riding the high of beating G2, qualifying for the quarterfinals. We got some time here, so I actually did want to talk to you about some of your playing time and your experience at the last World Championship you're on, which the last time you were Worlds was 2019.
Yeah.
With Clutch.
Uh-huh.
06. You were in the group with Fnatic, T1, RNG.
Yep.
What was that experience like for you? Not necessarily the losing, but just like Worlds in general.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the group that we drew, it was definitely like the hardest group of Worlds that year. And I mean, even Plans was like, I don't want to say it was easy for us because
you were
like,
2-2 in the play-in group before going to quarter, the best of five.
Yeah, and even in that tournament, like we got kind of lucky because I think one of the teams before us lost. That let us get the first seed in Plans.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we might have played against like the fourth Korean team or something. Mm. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, but I think so.
It was a crazy time, but
I think Fudge was on the OST team in that group.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, on Mammoth, yeah. And so was Triple, and we played versus like all these guys. Yeah, and I mean, but yeah, then going into group stages, it was like we pulled like three of the stronger teams. Mm-hmm. I don't think Fnatic was like that insane at the time, but they were still like relatively strong, and like. I don't know. For me, it was like a lot of culture shock because I was like, wow, these guys are like everyone I've been looking up to for so long. And at the same time, like RNG and SKT were unbelievable at that tournament.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was awesome. Yeah.
What was, and this is something that you probably had to overcome this year with NRG, but like the shock difference from going from LCS to Worlds and then having to play against like literally the best mid laners in the world.
Oh, I mean,
like, how do you handle it? Like, how do you handle it then? And then how do you think like Palafox handled it this year?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, reflecting on it, I don't think I handled it the best as a player because it was kind of like, I mean, these are icons to me. And it was like, wow, like, I know that I can be as good as these players. Mm. But back then, it almost felt like there was a bigger gap, if like I'm being honest.
Mm.
And then, I mean, how Palafox handles it. I mean, this kid is incredible on how like his mindset, honestly. He just thinks he's better than everyone, which is an insanely valuable trait as a player. I think you need to have some ego to like really be able to perform in these tournaments.
Yeah.
And like, if anything, he's just like excited to prove that he is like the same level or if not better than a lot of these mid laners.
Yeah. I think his mindset is incredible. I talked to his mom before the G2 game, and even she was just like, oh yeah, you guys didn't really believe in him. I'm like, yeah, we didn't. But it was amazing the way he responds to it. Because he uses it as fuel. And then he's like, I don't know, he's still so personable that he's still coming up to talk to you. It's not like he's like, ah, that guy, you know, 2 years ago didn't vote for me in All Pro or something.
Yeah.
It's like he carries it as a chip, but in like a good, positive, motivating way. It's
after
crazy.
The Zhaohu interview where he called him like the genius midfielder, I was like, Palafox is getting a lot of clout for this. I'm like, want to know like how he's going to respond. And like, I mean, he didn't change at all. It's great. Yeah.
So one other thing about 2019. Of the NA versus EU rivalry was a disaster.
Yeah.
Because that was a year where EU had G2 go to finals, but Splice and Fnatic also all made it out of groups. So three European teams made it out of groups. NA sent Team Liquid, who went 3-3, they're also in a tough group, didn't make it. C9 was in the G2 Griffin group, went 2-4, didn't make it. And then you guys went 0-6, so it was 3-0.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the other crazy thing. I want to get your reaction to this versus, you know, for the NA versus EU rivalry. The all-time world's records between NA and EU before this last week of games, where it was like 4-1 to mm-hmm. NA, was 35 wins for NA and 42 losses.
Oh, wow.
So 45%
yeah.
actually feels pretty even.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet I go back through history, and since even including 2014, where NA had two teams get out, six teams made it out of groups of 27. Yet Europe, 14 teams.
Wow, wow.
Out of 27.
I didn't know that. That's insane.
Double the teams, even though the head-to-head was a 45%. They sometimes had easier groups. They were better against the LPL and the LCK teams. Their overall win record was only 8% higher. It's mm-hmm. like, I think EU had like a 50% win rate overall in groups, and NA is like 42. So it feels really close. But the most frustrating thing to me about that is like, anytime it felt like it mattered, we lose.
Yep, yep. I don't know like why is that? Like why, I'm not really sure. I feel like in NA it's like, I don't want to say there's more pressure, but like when I think back to like 2019 in that era, mm-hmm. I feel like there were a lot of imports in the league who like came off of winning teams into NA. Mm-hmm. And like specifically for like Clutch Gaming, just like speaking from my experience, like we had Huni, Lyra, and like even early on the year we had Piglet. And I mean, these guys are legends that are used to winning everything. So it almost felt like there was a lot of pressure on us. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I compare that to the 2023 run the energy's having, it's like, there's no pressure for us. We've been riding like this, like all the way since like spring, summer, playoffs. We've just like, we're always the underdogs. And even our players, that like, we don't really have like huge egos on our team. So it just feels like more, I don't know, it just feels like everything is winnable for us. It's like, we're always like, we can do it. Why not? Like,
yeah. That's awesome to hear, because I'll say my, like one of the things that made me even want to take the TL job in the first place, that was literally coming off of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I saw three EU teams go through and no NA teams. And obviously you want to, you know, do well, win LCS. Yeah. I was like, I want to beat Europe at Worlds. And what's crazy is that year, TL beat MAD in play-in and went 1-1 against G2. But it was the same shit because we lost one game to Machi.
Yeah.
And didn't make it out of groups.
I remember that.
And GT 2-0 Machi. And we both split games with Suning, split games with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But then EU goes to the damn semifinals that year.
Just one game.
And it was this one game against Machi. So yeah, for me, and I'm definitely biased here, but it has felt close, which is why I was so, so relieved and excited when you guys were able to beat G2.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to hear that, it's great to hear that you haven't felt that pressure. Because in 2020, my God, man, the pressure was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, we had TSM going 0-6. We had FlyQuest, I think they started the first week 1-2. And we dropped our first game against Machi.
Yeah.
So literally everything, if you ever opened your phone, you were just reading crap.
Yep.
And what was worse is every media request wanted to ask you, what's wrong with North America?
Yep, yep.
Why aren't you doing this? Is it the players that don't care? Is it the... And you're just like, you just don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, has that... Have you not felt that this year with energy?
Not in the same way at all. Like, honestly, it just... Because like, our run, it's like a Cinderella story in a lot of ways. You know, it's like, no one expected us to win LCS. We win LCS. Mm-hmm. No one expects us to do anything in Swiss stage. We get out of Swiss stage. And like, I mean, the narrative is like very strong for us. I think we definitely have some insane plot armor. Like it started with contracts in the LCS finals. Just like his whole story was amazing. Like it was like 6 years since the last final he played in. Mm-hmm. Just like, it felt like we can't lose like because of just the plot. I don't know. It feels good. Yeah. And like, it's the opposite of what you're saying about social media. It's like right now when we go on social media, everyone is just like, oh, this is amazing. Like, and it hasn't done this in so long. Mm-hmm. It feels like we're really making our region proud, which is an incredible feeling.
I think you are making the region proud. So that's probably why you feel that way.
Yeah.
But it's really good to hear, because almost the correction of the high expectations and the like quote failure, even though all those failures were like, oh yeah, TL and Fly went 3-3. TL went 3-3 and didn't make it out. You know, this team lost a tiebreaker. It was so close each time.
Yeah.
But I would say almost because last year was so bad with C9, EG, and 100 Thieves all going 1-5.
Yeah.
There was able to be a little bit of a reset. And I also almost feel like G2, at least from the stuff that I read, was in the situation that NA used to be in, where it's like, oh my God, if we don't do this really hard thing, we're going to be considered failures.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a really difficult mindset to go into doing a really hard thing with.
Yeah, yeah. That makes me think, like, because I don't know if you saw the interview I did with Travis, but I kind of was talking about on there, like, our whole team sat down and watched a G2 video, and like, in the video, it's like kind of an inspirational video that LEC did, and
yeah.
Caps are just saying, like, everyone needs to stop thinking that everything is, like, useless to do, like, scrim, solo queue, like, et cetera. And we watched that as a team. It was, like, super inspirational. We're like, wow, these guys have a great mindset behind what they're doing. Really, like, understanding, like, the whole year leads up to Worlds. Like, everything you do every day leads up to, like, how you're going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we drew a lot from that, but it also makes me think, like, it definitely drew a lot of pressure to them as well. Because I feel like, in a lot of ways, they're the team that's leading the West in how to, like, how to like be a professional team, how to like make it to the top level, how to do it on repeat and like repeat the process over and over. And in the middle of our series that we played versus them, like after the first game, I was just looking at their player cams, like, because they have it on the TV and they just looked already, like, I don't want to say they looked defeated, but you could just tell there's a lot of stress.
They looked stressed.
Very, very stressed. Mm-hmm. Like, and I compared to us, like, I mean, we were just having fun.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, honestly, we were having fun in the middle of the match. Obviously, like, all the coaches really pushed after game one, like, full reset, guys. Like, we just destroyed these guys, but, like, we have to do it again. It probably won't be as easy as that first game. And, like, you could just tell and, like, feel the different mentalities each team had. And, like, it didn't feel like we had any pressure. And it felt like they were like, oh, if we lose, we're, like, letting down, like, everyone, basically.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because for me, I was actually one of the people preaching the whole week that this matchup between G2 and NRG was a, like, no downside matchup, because there were definitely a lot of people that didn't want NRG to play G2.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking, I hate losing so much to Europe, as has happened in X and X and X and X.
Yep.
And G2 is the best European team.
Yeah.
It would be better if C9 could just beat Fnatic. And then, you know, everyone else gets eliminated. We can claim superiority over here. I'm like, guys, no, that won't change anything.
Yeah.
Because if no one beats G2, people already think they're going to win. And you might have kept your nose out of this, but there was one very biased producer that I asked who said you guys were going to win in like 15 minutes, both games. He was like, yeah, they got it.
Yeah.
But everyone else, casters, analysts, myself, was going to predict G2, which is almost a level of cognitive dissonance when the all-time NA versus EU was a 45% win rate for NA.
Yeah.
Yet 100% of predictions were G2.
It's just the narrative, honestly. Like, I feel like, because you were talking earlier, like, we have a lot of teams that, well, our win rate's not the worst compared to EU, but so many more teams in EU get out.
Yeah.
But people don't really think back into the intricacies of why everything happened.
Yes.
Like all the teams that went like 3-3 and didn't make it out, like, it's just like at the end of the day, when it's all over,
what you remember.
You look at is like what you remember, like what team made it to quarters. That's like, that's the biggest thing. What team is making it like furthest? You're not like, no one thinks like, oh, this happened in group stage, and like everyone talks about that.
Yeah. And then I think another thing that makes it feel so off is it's not like in the past 7 years, NA has done nothing, but the two best things they had done were immediately followed by getting swept by Europe.
Yeah.
Worlds 2018, C9 3-0s a freak of freaks and eliminates the LCK from Worlds.
Crazy.
That's like this insane achievement.
Yeah, I remember watching that.
Yeah, and then the next week they get swept by Fnatic. So they're like, oh, well,
It's better. Yeah.
And it's over. Yeah. And then TL defeat the defending world champions IG 3-1 at MSI.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Tomorrow, like literally the next day, because it's MSI, they get swept by. So they get swept by G2.
Yeah.
So the like soaking in and understanding and remembering what happened never had a chance.
Yeah.
So that's why this one to me felt so meaningful.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Obviously, you guys are going to continue your run, but there is a 0% chance that it is immediately followed by an EU sweep.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because there's no EU teams
you
left.
You took care of that. Yeah.
It's funny.
How did you feel? I want you to kind of walk me through either a couple days before your G2 match and then the day of the G2 match, how things were going.
Well, I mean, the ability that we had to watch Gen.G play G2 beforehand, it helped us a ton, you know? I mean, like, we get to see their drafts, get to see how they beat them. So we did a lot of studying on those VODs. And, I mean, leading up to the games, I don't know, it's same old stuff, honestly. I don't think we, like, changed our approach because, I mean, our approach has been working for us. Mm-hmm. I like to think, like, our team, we take, like, it's, like, laid back but serious at the same time. Like, we love to just, like, have fun with each other. Not, like, no one's, like, too hard on anyone. Because I feel like what we were thinking is, like, a lot of the work that we've done in the past is, like, that's 99% of what we've already done.
I love that.
Like, I think once you're here and once, like, Swiss starts, it's, like, realistically, you're not going to be able to change a lot. We did have, like, the 5 days break before the G2 match, which helped us, like, add a champion or two to the pool. I mean, something, like, this is totally off, but
it's fine.
But something that, like, FBI really added to us is, like, the Senatom Kench pick. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's, like, been helping us a ton. And I see, like, T1 picking it up.
Yeah.
And, like, and that feels amazing for us. And, yeah, I mean, the approach was the same and just, like, focusing on, like, ourselves mainly. Mm-hmm.
What type of additional pressure on the day of the match did you feel? Or how was that day?
I don't want to say there is no pressure because that feels like
you
a little...
You can say that.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I don't know. It's just, like, our team, like, the aura we have together, it's just, like, very much us against ourselves. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're really focused on who we're playing versus, which, like, is amazing, you know? And like we kind of said earlier, we're underdogs in every match. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be how it is until the tournament ends for us. So it's just, like, even like, thinking past G2 and, like, into the next Weibo game.
Yeah.
Now, the one difference there, I think, is, like, it feels like we kind of want, like, our revenge because they took us out in Swiss. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same kind of scenario. It's, like, I don't think anyone really expects us to win. Maybe there's, like, slightly more pressure in that area now, mm-hmm. but it still feels like we want to keep, like, where we're at mentally.
Yeah.
Going, like, cause it's just been working.
Do you feel like everyone predicting the other team to win every time helps, hurts, or doesn't matter?
I think it helps for sure. Like, for sure it helps because it's like you're playing with a chip on your shoulder. You're like, mm-hmm. like screw all these guys that don't, like, believe in us, you know?
Yeah.
Like, eventually you guys are going to believe in us. And then, like, once that comes, like, then we'll see how we handle it then.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about, when EG won the split in 2022 spring, I think that was almost the beginning of a shift in what I feel like fans were calling for. Because there was so much support in their seemingly Cinderella run, but it was revolving around Danny and JoJo and this NA talent narrative.
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned, you know, Jensen and Bjergsen kind of ran the league for like seven
forever,
years.
Forever, yeah.
And even though Bjergsen at the time felt very like NA pride, I think when so many players got imported over time, and more specifically, I think just because they didn't advance far enough.
Yeah.
That people maybe have started turning on them. So it's almost refreshing that you see these NA players that teams are willing to take a chance on. But I think specifically the fact that EG won with those two NA talent players, and people can look past like, oh yeah, they had the LEC MVP in Inspired and, you know, world champion top laner in Impact as imports.
Yeah.
But then I think what you guys have done with essentially building a team of journeymen. It wasn't a team of rookies. It's not like you had to get a bunch of 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
It was a team of people that had had their shot, had fallen off of the perch, and are now going back up again.
Yeah.
And then also surrounding them with former players like yourself, and it's worked.
Yeah.
So I think, and I want to get your thoughts on this, those two things, the EG win and your win, are going to completely change the way North American teams approach roster building.
100%. I mean, we're already seeing it, like, just in, like, the kind of, like, the rumors that are happening for the offseason that's already, like, started for NA.
Yeah.
But, I mean, massive respect goes out to, like, everyone who was on CLG in 2022 spring. Mm-hmm. Like, Greg Kim, John, ThinkHard, Croissant, like, I mean, all of us, like, they gave the opportunity to us to make, like, a solid 2-3 year plan with mm-hmm. our team. So basically what they told us, like, hey, by 2024, by 2025, that's when we're really going to want to make our run for Worlds. That's when we're going to want to make our run for the title. So all of 2022, it was like a big warm-up year. And like, that's when we started working. I mean, the roster was still different back then.
Yeah.
Like, we had Poom, Luger, and Bob Jenkins at the start.
Yep.
But, like, Dokla was in Academy. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, eventually we make the FBI Ignar swap, which was, like, a massive change for us.
Yeah.
But, like, we got to work with the core three for basically, like, a year and a half.
Yep.
And, like, just like, seeing their progress has been, like, amazing. And we've added on more coaches since then. And, like, every single person on the staff has just done incredible work for this team. Like, you can't credit our success to one person. I think just like, especially like ThinkCard, he delegates everyone really, really well, because having a big coaching staff is not easy.
Yeah.
I think you have a lot of ideas floating. You have a lot of different people who want to run the team their own way. And that can be extremely tough to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we really came together as like a unit, and like, everyone kind of knows what like their individual job is. And I will say, like, having the positional coaches that are all like ex-pro players, I always like to think like,
it's hard to do. You couldn't do that 7 years ago.
No, not at all. But it's amazing, because like, in a lot of ways, like, they're the fingers and we're like the brains in some way. Like, I don't want to like take the credit from them, you know, but like, just watching how they've grown from like just being these like amazing individual players to like now they're like, I mean, I watch these guys, they're competing in scrims against the best players in the world.
Yeah.
They're holding their own. They're doing great. Like, they even like they outperform them sometimes. And it's just like, it makes me proud. And it's just like, it's awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think I was talking with Dokla about this, because he's obviously been through it. He was a LCS starter on Optic. He dropped down to amateur. We actually signed him from amateur for Academy in 2020 OTL before I left. And then he obviously moved over to CLG. But like, I'm really happy for players like Dokla who haven't gotten that second chance yet.
Yeah.
Because I think, and this is maybe a different tangent, and I'm also speculating a little bit, because I obviously can't know how every individual team signs their players. I think some of the outrage from the community of like, oh, these lazy owners signing imports is actually a little bit misplaced, because they at the time were just responding to the environment in the market.
Yeah.
Because there was a period of time in 2020, 2021, when five or six teams were massively well-funded. But part of how you get massively well-funded is because your aspirations are extremely high.
Yeah.
So we had like six teams that were given these massive budgets and told win at all costs.
Yeah. And obviously only one team can win. So.
And obviously only one team can win. But what do you do if you can win at all costs? You're in North America, a region that hasn't necessarily done internationally.
Yeah.
And you have bigger budgets than so many other places outside of China. You're going to sign resumes. And the way you're going to prove that you did your job properly to your investors is by showing them the resume that you signed.
Yeah.
And you can't take all this investment to like, oh, let's go win Worlds, and then be like, by the way, this Demonte guy from 2020 Clutch who went 0-6, I think he can grow.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that was the environment.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even after 2019 for me, I wasn't on an LCS team in 2020.
Yeah.
I went to Worlds.
And then I
played Academy the next split. And it's like, I mean, it was a very crazy like time in my life. I think I just completely changed like as a human in those years, because I mean, I rode this huge high, and then I kind of had like a big reality check when I came back. Obviously I crawled my way back in and like made it back to LCS, and like, I was really proud of myself for that and everything. And then
that's incredible.
Obviously like, I literally went from Dignitas to Golden Guardians to 100 Thieves in three splits. So it's just like, kind of got tossed around the ringer.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the 100 Thieves, it didn't end up like working out well for me either.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of when, I started making the shift to like, I did streaming for a little bit, but like, if I'm being honest with myself, like, my heart is in competition and in LCS. Yeah. And like, I mean, you could ask anyone on the team after we won LCS, I think I might have cried more than anyone. Like,
man, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's been what, seven years of my adulthood from age 18 to now 26 next year or next month. And like, getting that win, even as a coach, I mean, I think some people would like underplay the achievement as a coach, but like, we are a team, and like,
we all did it.
I'll never forget this year for like my whole life. It's just amazing. And now we're on a train to Busan, and it's like, it's just so cool.
It's just going to keep going.
Yeah. It's awesome.
And just to close up, so people don't misconstrue my thoughts. The reason that it is now going to change is the resumes that you're signing, you can make a much stronger argument for the other approach. And I think also from what we hear, there's not going to be six teams spending to win at all costs.
Yeah, yeah.
So people are going to have to take more creative solutions, and it's going to give a lot of opportunity to the players that don't have the big resumes, that have fallen down before,
yeah,
and are able to motivate and have the right culture.
Yeah.
And I actually do want to ask you about the team culture of Energy. And did you see Mark Zimmerman popped off on Twitter last night? Did you see some of these tweets?
You might have to show me.
Okay, I will. And we, if this takes too long, we can edit it real quick. But I need you to read the, I need to read this tweet. So he sent out like a series of tweets, of like, what is EU's excuse? And he prefaced this by saying like, these are troll posts.
Yeah.
But it's meant to mimic the stuff that North America heard before. Okay. What is EU's excuse for this performance? How can they be worse than NA, who are lazy paycheck stealers? EU has better ping. EU has better solo queue. EU servers are bigger. EU's have a thriving tier two scene. EU doesn't have Hollywood parties to distract them.
That's hilarious.
How much do you think this stuff actually contributed in the past? Like these sentiments contributed in the past to imports getting signed, or even actually like, how much do you think these sentiments were true in the past of like NA ping, NA solo queue, NA servers?
I think people really underestimate how much narrative actually matters.
Yeah.
I think like, I mean, all the time, like the narrative is like, it's just something that's in the air, kind of like it's an aura that's around. But in a lot of times it's like the owners or the general managers, like they really do care about like what the public sentiment is.
Because that's also the sentiment that the people above them are going to be reading off as well.
Yeah,
and it's going to trickle down.
Yeah, it's top down. So like that stuff really does matter. So like, it makes me even think to like when co-streaming became really big, I feel like a lot of like that stuff, and it was always talked about terribly, always terribly.
Everything is
bad. And it's just, it's just like, I would love if after this 2023 year that like maybe like the narrative drivers, whoever, like, because I feel like you kind of know, like when you're able to drive the narrative, like whoever, casters, analysts, streamers.
For sure. And I think, unfortunately, like even though he may not have known he was doing it, Doublelift was a really negative narrative driver when he started co-streaming.
100%.
He took all these hardcore longtime LCS fans.
Yeah.
And then for an entire season, he talked about how bad the LCS was.
Yeah. And not to like knock on him at all, but
it was
like,
very entertaining. He had some great stories, but it's just one of the effects.
Yeah. And something that's really cool, I mean, I can't say I'm like the biggest Cadril watcher, but I do feel like he's very more focused on like maybe like strategy stuff. And like, he's very fun and like crazy on stream and stuff too. But like, it would be cool to, if NA had like a streamer who's like really big like that, kind of pushing more like positive light on everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of being able to do that is you have something to point to.
Yeah.
Energy true. 2023.
There you go.
So let's maybe go. This is, I maybe hope, this is I the hope. Shift.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
What was Energy's culture like this year?
Oh, okay.
Because there was Team Liquid who came out at the start of the year and said like, we're going to sign all Koreans because we need these people to work hard.
Yeah.
And at least my experience is I was on, you know, Team Liquid and we had a mix, right? We had Tactical, who was North American. We had Core, who I think is one of the best imports the league has ever had. And no one should ever put anything bad to him because he fostered so many academy level players and mentored so many people. Mm-hmm. And the year that I had Jensen in 2021, he had more solo queue games than anybody else on the server.
Yeah.
Right. So like, yet, you know, Tactical was a hard worker. The team themselves set their own culture.
Yeah.
But my long-winded question is basically, what was your culture like and how hard did you guys work?
Yeah. So I think it's kind of hard to answer like how hard did you guys work? Cause it's like, you can't really point it to like anything in particular, but like something that I learned a lot. I mean, these are my first 2 years coaching, you know, and something I learned a lot from ThinkHard and Croissant is that it's extremely invaluable to keep a positive environment and like a more relaxed environment. At least that's like their approach is like heavy leaning towards that.
Yeah.
I think, cause I had this idea when I started coaching, like, oh, I'm going to be like, maybe I should like really like hone in, like make sure these guys are getting like what needs to be done. And like, not to say that like we allow people to slack off, but it's not like super intense all of the time. Mm-hmm. I think in summer, we kind of like, I mean, we had a terrible start to summer. We got perfect gamed by Immortals. Like first game of the split, you know, like it's insane.
Well, no, you got perfect gamed by, you lost to Immortals in the throw game when FPI had 15 kills on Zeri. You got perfect gamed by EG, I think.
I don't remember, but either way, like around that time, like I don't know, our solo queue numbers were low. So something we started doing, I handle a lot of like our morning routine stuff on the team. Mm. So like one of that things is like we keep like a big whiteboard in front of the room, updated every day. And what we did was we started putting Cloud9 solo queue numbers on the board, and then we compared it to ours.
Nice.
And we're like, guys, like if we want to be the best team in LCS, we have to match this.
Yeah.
There's like not really a question about it. And in that way, we're like motivating them in a way by not just nagging them. We're right. like just showing them like, this is what they're doing. If we want to be as good as Cloud9, this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And like that was like one way that we like kind of motivated them without making it stressful.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, like the culture, like we, all the coaches are very aligned on our team. So basically what happened between spring and summer when CLG sold to NRG, we brought in Juves and Mash from mm-hmm. Academy, and they're also helping us now too.
Mm.
So we basically have 7 coaches on the roster, which is a lot. And every single one of these coaches, I mean, down the list, Soaz, Juves, me, Apollo, Mash, these are the 5 extra coaches.
Yeah.
Don't mash me. We're like very aligned in how we want to improve the players as individuals. And like, it feels like Thomas and Chris, they handle a lot of like draft stuff, a lot of like overall stuff. And then all of like our 5 jobs is like making sure our players are there mentally sound. They're like paying attention to like what it means to like the strategy in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And just keeping a light culture and then making sure I think it's incredible having the ability to have this many coaches because let's say one player really is like frustrated, really wants to vent.
Mm-hmm.
He can go to any, like their individual coach, he can go to their individual coach if they want, or mm-hmm. they can talk to any coach that they want. And we have so much like extra like space to be able to like allow them to talk to us.
Yeah.
Like I had countless discussions with every single player on our team in the middle of practice.
So it's not like you're just Palafox. You're actually just, if you wanted to talk to vent with Dokla, you can.
100%. Yeah. I mean, there's more roles to fill on a team than just positional coaching.
Yeah.
You know, I think every coach stepped up in their own way. And like, I mean, like for like me and Juves, you know, we actually handle a lot of the huddles. So like the pregame speeches, like,
right.
I mean, Juves is amazing at it. I've like kind of like taken a seat back because before he joined, like I was doing it, but like he's amazing at that. And, you know, we just keep a positive environment and just like really keep them focused on like what needs to happen.
Yeah. Do you want to that's amazing. Do you want to say anything else? Like speak to the fans, something you want to get off your chest?
Yeah. I hope everyone did like, I just hope after 2023, the whole West like tries to like step up in a lot of ways from every player, coach, streamer, anyone who has an impact on the scene. I hope we were able to reflect on 2023 and like what it really means to everyone. And like, you know, like I hope we can keep the momentum going. And yeah, it's just, this is an amazing timeline to be in. So I'm super grateful.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for what you have done and what your team has done and what I hope it pays forward to the next year, because I think the LCS has had a lot of really tough down years and the positivity can go a really long way. I look to the way that Europe had their climb back in 2019. And a lot of that was through positivity. We need to do it ourselves. We need to build our own structures. We need to mimic what these other teams and regions are doing rather than copy it and make it our own. And I think that's what you guys have been able to do. Like there's not many LCK or Korean teams out there with 5 former pro positional coaches and a bunch of players who have bounced around, yet you're the best in the region and you're the best performing North American team in years. So congratulations, man. It's been awesome to watch.
Sweet. Thank you, dude.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of JLXP. We're currently at a stop on our way to Busan. This is also, if you've made it to this point, I appreciate you. Make sure you check out Let's Go over on the LCS YouTube channel. And that does it for here on the Train to Busan with DeMonte. See you next time.